So hello everyone, welcome back to the new podcast. And today the podcast will be, the story I'll be telling will be more a patriarchy kind of thing, means that it is an extract from Long Walk to Freedom. This is the autobiography by Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela writes about himself, but the first thing means a little description about the story will be not there. Just I'll be telling about some practices. The first practices is apartheid, which for which there will be many. I will be considering that too much, the apartheid system. And means the full name of Nelson Mandela, most of us would not know that. The full name of Nelson Mandela was Nelson Rohililia Mandela, something like that. I am not able to pronounce it exactly, but it is something like that. So it is basically about the time when the South Africa gets freedom. Nelson Mandela in this autobiography tells about how his freedom struggle began, how he started to struggle for his country, how his love started for the country, and when they gained the freedom, what was the reaction of the people, what was his reaction. So this is all about the extract is from Long Walk to Freedom. The extract will be particularly from the part when South Africa gets the freedom. So here I start. 10th May dawned bright and clear. For the past few days I had been pleasantly busied by dignitaries and world leaders who were coming to pay their respect for their inauguration. The inauguration would be the largest gathering ever of international leaders on South African soil. The ceremonies took place in the lovely sandstone amphitheater formed by the Union buildings in Pretoria. For decades, this had been the seat of white supremacy, and now it was the site of rainbow gathering of different colors and nations for the installation of South Africa's first democratic non-racial government. On that lovely autumn day, I was accompanied by my daughter Zinani. On the podium, Mr. De Klerk was the first one, and as second deputy president. Then Thabo Mbeki was sworn in as first deputy president. When it was my turn, I pledged to obey and uphold the constitution and devote myself to the well-being of republic and its people. To the assembled guests and the watching world, I said, today all of us do, by our presence here, confer glory and hope to newborn liberty. Out of the experience of an extraordinary human disaster that lasted too long, must be born a society of which all humanity will be proud. The extraordinary human disaster here was meant by the apartheid system and different racial practices done by the Britishers, operation by the Britishers. This was the human disaster in this. Now I continue. We who were outlaws not so long ago have today been given the rare privilege to be the host of the nations of the world on our own soil. We thank all of our distinguished international guests for having come to take positions with the people of our country of what is, after all, a common victory for justice, for peace, for human dignity. We have at last achieved our political emancipation. We pledge ourselves to liberate all our people from the continuing bondage of poverty, deprivation, suffering, gender, and other discrimination. Never, never, and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another. The sun shall never set on so glorious a human achievement. Let freedom reign. God bless Africa. A few moments later, we all lifted our eyes in awe as a spectacular array of South African jets, helicopters, and troop carriers rode in perfect formation of the Union building. It was not only a display of pinpoint precision and military force, but a demonstration of the military's loyalty to democracy, to a new government that had been freely and fairly elected. Only moments before, the highest general of South African Defence Force and police, their chests bedecked with ribbons and medals from days gone by, saluted me and pledged their loyalty. I was not unmindful of the fact that not so many years before, they would have not saluted me, but arrested me. Finally, a chevron of Impala jets left a smoke trail of the black, red, green, blue, and gold of the new South African flag. The day was symbolized for me by playing of our two national anthems for me and the vision of white singing, Nkosi Sikelel in Africa, and black singing, Die Staan, the old anthem of the Republic. Although that day neither group knew the lyrics of the anthem they once despised, they would soon know the words by heart. On the day of inauguration, I was overwhelmed with a sense of history. In the first decade of the 20th century, a few years after the bitter Anglo-Boer War and after my own birth, the white-skinned people of South Africa patched up their differences and erected a system of racial discrimination against the dark-skinned people of their own land. The structure they created formed the basis of one of the harshest, most inhumane societies the world has ever known. Now, in the last decade of the 20th century, now in my own eighth decade as a man, that system had been overturned forever and replaced by one that recognizes the rights and freedoms of all people, regardless of the color of their skin. That day had become about through the unimaginable sacrifices of thousands of my people, people whose suffering and courage can never be counted or repaid. I felt that day, as I have on so many other days, that I was simply the sum of all those African patriots who had gone before me. That long and noble line ended and now began again with me. I was pained that I was not able to thank them and that they were not able to see what their sacrifices had wrought. The policy of apartheid created a deep and lasting wound in my country and my people. All of us spent many years, if not generations, recovering from that profound hurt. But the decades of the oppression and brutality had another unintended effect. That was it. Produced the Oliver Tambos, the Walter Sisulus, the Chief Luthulis, the Yusuf Dadus, the Bram Fischers, the Robert Sobukis of our time. Men of such extraordinary courage, wisdom, and generosity that their like may never be known again. Perhaps it requires such depths of operation to create such heights of character. My country is rich in the minerals and the gems that lie beneath its soil, but I have always known that its greatest wealth is its people, finer and truer than the purest diamonds. It is from these comrades in the struggle that I learned the meaning of courage. Time and again, I have seen men and women risk and give their lives for an idea. I have seen men stand up to attacks and torture without breaking, showing a strength and resilience that defines the imagination. I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear. No one is born hating another person because the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate, and if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love, for love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. Even the grimmest times in prison, when my comrades and I were pushed to our limits, I would see a glimmer of humanity in one of the guards, perhaps just for a second, but it was enough to reassure me and keep me going. Man's goodness is a flame that can be hidden but never extinguished. In life, every man has twin obligations: obligation to his family, to his parents, to his wife and children, and he has an obligation to his people, his community, his country. In a civil and humane society, each man is able to fulfill those obligations according to his own inclinations and abilities. But in a country like South Africa, it was almost impossible for a man of my birth and color to fulfill both of those obligations. In South Africa, a man of color who attempted to live as a human being was punished and isolated. In South Africa, a man who tried to fulfill his duty to his people was unavoidably ripped from his family and his home and was forced to live a life apart, a twilight existence of a secretary and rebellion. I did not in the beginning choose to place my people above my family, but in attempting to serve my people, I found that I was prevented from fulfilling my obligations as a son, a brother, a father, and a husband. I was not born with the hunger to be free. I was born free, free in every way that I could know, free to run in the fields near my mother's herd, free to swim in the clear stream that ran through my village, free to roast millets under the stars and ride the broad backs of slow-moving bulls. As long as I obeyed my father and abided by the customs of my tribe, I was not troubled by these laws of men or God. It was only when I began to learn my boyhood freedom was an illusion, when I discovered, young man, that my freedom had already been taken from me, that I began to hunger for it. At first, as a student, I wanted freedom only for myself, the transitory freedom of being able to stay out at night, read and what I please, and go where I choose. Later, as a young man in Johannesburg, I learned for the basic and honorable freedoms of achieving my potential, of earning my keep, of marrying and having family, the freedom not to be obstructed in a lawful life. But then I slowly saw that I, not only was I free, but my brothers and sisters were not free. I saw that it was not my freedom that was curtailed, but the freedom of everyone who looked like I did. That is when I joined African National Congress, and that is when the hunger for my own freedom became the greater hunger for the freedom of my people. It was a desire for the freedom of my people to live their lives with dignity, the self-respect, and that animated my life, that transformed a frightened young man into the bold one, that drove a law-abiding attorney to become a criminal, that turned a family-loving husband into a man without a home, that forced a life-loving man to live like a monk. I am not more virtuous or self-sacrificing than the next man, but I found that I could not even enjoy the poor and limited freedoms I was allowed when I knew my people were not free. Freedom is indivisible. The chains on anyone of my people were the chains on all of them. The chains on all my people were the chains on me. I knew that the oppressor must be liberated just as surely as the oppressed. A man who takes away another man's freedom is a prisoner or of hatred. He is locked behind the bars of prejudice and narrow-mindedness. I am not truly free. I am talking away someone else's freedom just as surely as I am not free when my freedom is taken away from me. The oppressed and oppressor alike are robbed of their humanity. This was the whole chapter. I hope that you like it, and sorry for the disturbance behind me. Actually, the construction work is going on, and another thing is that I'm also suffering from cold. That's why I was not able to post podcasts from such a long time. So thank you for this podcast, and I'll be surely posting more podcasts today. So stay tuned. Thank you.